This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
I would like to welcome five-time PGA Tour winner and Golf Channel commentator Mark Wilson to the Sub 70 podcast. Mark, thank you very much for taking the time today to be with us.
Yeah, Jason, looking forward to it.
Well, my first question is, how is the transition going from being a full-time PGA Tour player to having your new role on the Golf Channel as doing golf commentary, and how is that role going to be defined for you? Will you be in the studio? Are you going to be out in tournaments? How's that sort of going so far?
It's slow. It's a good way to describe it. I'm super excited about it, and I'm just sort of getting my foot in the door right now. The only thing I've done so far is been in the studio for a couple of Golf Central programs, and it was during the week of the Mayakoba tournament, which I was fortunate enough to win back in 2009. So they brought me in kind of as an analyst in terms of talking about the golf course and what the players might expect. And this was on Tuesday and Wednesday, so lead up to the tournament. And it was a really interesting thing to see the Golf Channel building and the buzz there about golf and hanging out in the newsroom with all the other people involved, the producers, directors, sound people, the editors, and just talking about what's going on in the golf world and giving your opinion about it and formulating things. And so that was my start, studio. And I would love to get into tournaments. According to the producers there, it's like, this is how, at NBC anyways, this is how you get your foot in the door. And then we can talk about tournaments down the road. The only thing I do have lined up for sure right now is that I'm going to be doing a PGA Tour live broadcast of the Waste Management Phoenix Open the last week of January. And if you're not familiar with that, it's really on pjtour.com. It's something that you can subscribe to, and it's like featured holes, featured groups, and it's going all day long. They do, like, I want to say 8 or so hours of coverage every day, maybe even more than that. And it's really two or three guys talking about what they're seeing there. It's slow right now. I'm kind of anxious to get things going. In the meantime, I'm still working on my game and just practicing. I'm paying a lot more attention to the golf world than I used to. I used to obviously just focus on my golf and really not care what the media is saying. And now here I am watching Golf Central every night, tuning into broadcasts and keeping informed about what's going on. And I love this game. It's been a part of my life ever since I was a little kid. And so it's an easy thing to do, to be paying attention to golf.
How did that opportunity come about? Is it something that you kind of put out there that you thought you would have a skill set that would be, you know, good for the Golf Channel? Or did they kind of come to you and say, hey, we have an opportunity. We think with your experience and personality, it'd be a good fit. And then how do you see your role of, or how do you see your best attributes of what you want to bring to the viewer when they are watching you on television?
Yeah, really, it was really me reaching out a couple of years ago, and it was just seeing some of my friends get started with it, mainly Justin Leonard. He played a lot of practice rounds with him on the PGA Tour and saw what he was kind of, it felt like he was transitioning. He made a move with his family, and I'm like, oh. And then all of a sudden he started doing TV, and it made me start thinking, what am I going to do when I'm done, when my body's giving out on me? And I pursued it, met up with a producer for NBC named Molly Solomon at the KPMG women's event at Olympia Fields last year. And she showed me around all day long into the studio and just how they do things. And it was really fun to see it in action. Because when you're on the PGA Tour playing, you really don't pull the curtain back. We don't know what's going on behind what they're talking about, what they're all doing. It is unbelievable, a team effort of people that put together these broadcasts. And so it was really me just reaching out to them. And then I was honest with them, saying I'm still pursuing golf full time. Last year I played, and I said, but I'm interested. And then come August this year, when I had another subpar year, in my opinion, in terms of PGA Tour results, I decided that I'm going to call them up and say, hey, I am all in. Please give me some opportunities if you want. And this was that was the start just last week. In terms of my role in it, I certainly want to just bring my experiences as a player. I want the viewers to be able to, for me to be able to paint a picture for the viewers of what what that player is actually thinking. And too many times when I see golf on TV, there's way too much talk about score, especially when you tune in like a Thursday broadcast and so-and-so's over a putt and they say this putt will give them a share of the lead. That is the farthest thing from a player's mind on a Thursday. And it really, a lot of times, shouldn't be really a part of a player's mind all week. It's a matter of you're playing against the golf course. Hopefully you can get the least amount of strokes and hoist the trophy at the end of the week. So that's just one little example of how I'm hoping to help the viewers understand what these players are dealing with. Also, like lies. I mean, I think the cameras are a lot better than they used to be. However, around the greens, golfers know what it's like to just have that one little piece of grass behind what looks like a really good lie dictate the difference of a good chip shot. And I'd like to bring that to the viewers too, to not just say if he flubs his chip, go, oh man, he must be nervous. It really could actually just be because he just was a little bit indecisive about what the lie was going to do, and that made him indecisive in his swing. And so those are kind of initially the thoughts that I want to bring to the viewers.
Your playing schedule next year, so what will that look like in the sense of do you have any idea how many opportunities you'll have in the past champions? Will you play Webb at all? And if you do get the starts on the PGA Tour, how are you then going to balance, you know, all the work that goes into doing television with getting the work done that needs to be competitive on the PGA Tour to compete against those guys?
Yeah, it's a big balancing act. And all the guys that I've talked to, it's near impossible to do both. And that's why I kind of waited until this year to just really say, you know what, I'm done with playing competitive golf full-time. It doesn't mean I don't want to improve, just like any other golfer who goes out there and works at his game. So I'm still kind of approaching it as a PGA Tour professional with very limited starts. I will get into the what's now called the Desert Classic in the old Bob Holt tournament that I was fortunate enough to win in 2012, which carried with it a 10-year exemption into the tournament, and it works out amazing for us because my in-laws live in Palm Desert, and third week of January, us living in Elmhurst, Illinois, our family will be ready to get a little bit of break from the snow. So we go out there and play that event. So that's a definite. Other than that, a couple of opposite events. And the way the past champion category works is if you play well early and have a couple of decent weeks, then all of a sudden you get some more starts. But most of your starts come in the summer when the fields go to 156 men and there's more daylights, you can do it. So it's kind of interesting, though, because at that point, my kids are out of school, and then we like to do stuff as a family. So that's kind of why I've made the decision that golf, my competitive golf, tournament golf, is definitely way down on the totem pole right now. If it fits in, great. If TV comes with an opportunity saying, we want you to do this event, and I still get in on my number, I think I'd go with TV right now. That's kind of where I'm at with that. And in terms of just getting ready for my golf, it's like still practicing and playing and working out and trying to do all those things that are needed to compete with the best players in the world. These kids are so good coming out of college now, and they're hungry to win. And I've definitely seen that what I feel is an elevation in the game of golf, whether it's from technology improving with the equipment that they use or the way that they practice with TrackMan and stuff like that. I mean, the average score has definitely come lower and myself, I feel like I've maybe slightly got a little bit worse and that's not going to cut it. So I need to get better and I love working at the game and that's really where I get most of my joy from. It's just that journey of trying to find something that works and feels good, and you take it to the golf course and it produces a good score.
Well, before we start talking about everything you accomplished in your career, I figure since you are kind of a media member now, I'll get your opinion on the topics from this weekend. So, and kind of last week in golf, and sort of get your 2 cents on this stuff. So my first one, which I saw you talking about earlier on the Golf Channel, but I don't know if our listeners have heard you speak of it, but was Justin Rose changing over to Honma, on his equipment deal. And what's your opinion when you've been with a manufacturer like you've been with Ping forever, and you can sort of, there's a lineage of how the product sort of evolves, so you're comfortable with the last one, so you'll be comfortable with this one, has to make that easy, of making that sort of jump, and I don't know what his contract's going to look like, of how many clubs he has to play, if it's just the irons or whatnot. What's the potential danger of that? And the other question I have is, were you ever close to doing anything like that and decided not to because of the potential downfall of you know, guys switching all their equipment and how hard of a decision that can be?
Yeah. Well, the danger in it, I think, is just in second guessing yourself, right? You've gotten to the number one player. If you're Justin Rose, you've gotten to be the number one player in the world in a few different weeks. You're obviously a top 10 machine in the last couple of years around the world, lots of wins. The danger, I think, is when you go out there and you hit a poor shot, and now you've got another variable in it. It's like, oh, was that me or was that the equipment? And of course, he's going to have a team of people that are going to devote themselves to making sure he has the exact specs and everything he wants. He's going to put a lot of time into that. I don't understand why you'd want to do that at this point. I would think that what he wants to do in the game of golf is to win major championships and leave that legacy. And he's on a great track to do that. He's got one U.S. Open. The way he's playing, he should be contending for a lot of other majors. And I would think that's what you'd want to put all your time and effort into. Instead, now he's going to be spending a lot of days working on new equipment. Now, I have heard that it's only the irons, so he's still going to be hitting the TaylorMade woods and ball. Is that right? Did he play TaylorMade ball?
I believe he did, yeah.
I believe he does, yes. And so it's really the iron. So it's not a huge change. I just feel like there's something in your mind that might go through, like, wondering, did I make a wrong decision? Now, on the flip side, you start thinking, okay, now I've never been the number one player in the world. I've been up there as high as 24th, the best I did. There's sometimes these players, I would think, have an invincibility about them in their psyche. So he's like, I could play with anything. And maybe he's almost thinking differently than us, going, you know what, I'm number one in the world right now. Well, he was last week, I guess. I think Brooks Koepka, based on the numbers, is now number one. He's like, I'm missing something in my iron play. And that's maybe that half a shot, a tournament or a round that is going to be the difference of me contending in the majors. You know, us on the outside look like, you're number one, you're the best player in the world. Why would you want to jeopardize that? Justin Rose is probably thinking, I just want to get better, and here's one of the ingredients to making me better. And so I'm not going to second-guess him at all for doing it. I really do not think it's a money thing. We won't know, I guess, what the contract's going to be. He's got plenty of money. He's got a great family. He wants to make his mark in the game in terms of winning as many tournaments as he can, being a major champion. I really think that that's what he's after. There's another little thought there. I mean, you think of the stable of guys that they've got there at TaylorMade, including Tiger Woods and Jason Day, Dustin Johnson. A player like Justin Rose, kind of used to having your ego fed. You just wonder, is he tired of being down the totem pole when he's actually the number one player in the world? That could have been part of the decision as well.
Harder to change potentially equipment or the golf ball. So if he's playing the same ball, that takes that element out. But if, as a PGA Tour player, what would be more difficult?
Great question. I think they're both tough. I guess probably the actual clubs. I mean, the ball, you know, if you still have the, it's not as variable. right? You've got just one ball you're hitting all these different clubs with, whereas you've got 13 clubs that you're probably working on to hit that ball with. So I would have to say the clubs themselves. And you touched upon earlier, and I apologize for not answering it, but myself, did I ever get tempted with that? A little bit. When I had my good run in 2011 with a couple of wins, my agent doing his due diligence came to me with some things, and it had been a little bit more money. I'm loyal to Ping and Titleist. They've been loyal to me when I was playing in college and a nobody, and I really believe that they have the best equipment in golf. And so that was really easy for me. And knowing myself, I think I would have felt like a sellout if I went to somebody else for a few extra bucks. And let's face it, in terms of myself, I made most of my money on the golf course. I knew I wasn't bringing people to the stand like a Ricky Fowler. So I knew, I guess, where my bread was buttered, and I was going to focus on the best equipment for me to try to make money on the golf course.
Also, some guys, and I'm in my 40s, you're in 40s. It's kind of cool to see the guys in the 40s win. Lee Westwood, I saw that interview afterwards. You know, he puts up 64. He's emotional. He's crying, you know, which is understandable, not knowing if he's going to get it done at 45 for his 24th European Tour win, which is crazy good. And then Cooch coming through kind of after a tough year, not making Ryder Cup, and just shows up and plays Matt Kuchar golf, greens and fairways and making some putts and gets the win. So thoughts on those two victories from those two great players?
So excited for both of them. I played a lot of golf with both, gotten close with the Kuchars just because they have our wives are good friends, and they have two boys that are similar in ages to my two oldest. And so we grew up together on tour. Matt and Sibby, they were some of the only ones to believe in homeschooling at first and out there on the PGA Tour. So they were out week in, week out. And so we got to spend a lot of time with them, and so proud of them. It is fun to see the gray-haired guys doing well. And Lee Westwood as well. Played some golf with him in his prime. An incredible ball striker. Hit it far and solid, and really a fun guy to be around out there. And I always was impressed with how I felt like he was always trying to make me feel welcome and comfortable whenever I was paired with him. I remember playing him in the match play tournament and him just asking I think I was one up with two to play, and we're walking on the 17th fairway, and out of nowhere, he starts asking about my family. And I just thought that was really classy. And he's got a better, good perspective about what's important in life, not just golf. With that said, we put so much time and effort into working on the games, and when it goes awry and you're not sure it's going to come back ever again, I can understand the tears that you saw from Lee Westwood and the jubilation from Matt Kuchar that we got it done again. It's a really satisfying moment, and one they'll probably remember for a while.
When you're playing with Westwood in his prime, was the ball striking superior to even other guys on the PGA Tour? Was it that impressive to see him play and hit golf shots? Was it just beyond world-class good?
It was. The trajectory of his driver and the straightness of it was second to none. It was just this perfect launch, and it'd go out there and fly in the close to 300 and roll. It looked like playing with a robot. And now in the greens, he all of a sudden looked like a robot in that sense. Like he was paralyzed on the greens a little bit. And you always think about it. Thankfully, God doesn't give everybody everything. Because if he could putt just somewhat naturally, he would have just ran away with a bunch of majors. Instead, here he has no major championships to account for. But yeah, Lee Westwood was, it was fun to watch him strike a golf ball.
Champions Tour, big week for those guys. Vijay goes crazy shooting 61 at Phoenix Country Club, which is shows how good he is and how good those guys out there still. And then the other story is Bernhard Langer winning another, you know, Charles Schwab Cup at 61. Amazing how good he is still. And as a follow-up to that, you'll be exempt for the Champions Tour in, what, 4 or 5 years or so. Is that a tour that you would look forward to playing and getting yourself kind of ready for it at that point in time, or do you have to see how the TV thing goes if you're going to make that call or not?
it's something I'm definitely interested in. You know, when I see Paul Goyos' ball speed flashed up on the screen at 156, I have some hope, because I'm kind of under 160 now. And so I'm like, all right, maybe I can play with those guys out there a little bit. Distance isn't as paramount as on the PGA Tour. You know, looking at what Vijay Singh did, he works harder than anybody I've ever seen. Still is trying to get better at the game. Just loves competing. And it was really cool to see a final round like that. And the longevity of Bernhard Langer. It's almost easy to say that he's better now than he was on the PGA Tour, certainly in relation to his peers. He's got a lot more wins on the PGA Tour champions than he does on the PGA Tour. Hard to believe he's only won three times on the actual PGA Tour, two Masters and one in Hilton Head. Of course, there's maybe 80 other international wins. It's really fun to see that you can continue to compete at this game at such a later stage in life. Other sports, you're retiring at 30s and early 40s. You're kind of crazy if you're still playing football in your 40s. We don't see that very often. So that's one thing about golf that's really appealing. It's also a little tough on a player like myself who feels like, boy, it'd be a lot easier if this is just the norm that you retire at age 40. And that's kind of when I sort of didn't have that many good finishes on the PGA Tour anymore. Didn't feel like I was competing as well. If everybody else is retiring at that stage, it'd been a lot easier for me to retire and move on and do something else. However, there's that carrot always dangling out there. You watch Bernhard Langer win a Schwab Cup and shoot the scores he's doing at age 61. It kind of wants you to keep going, and that's why I kind of keep competing. And yeah, I'll be exempt out there. I'm 44. I'll be exempt out there in 6 years. It's definitely something that I'm looking forward to. I see the other players do it. It's kind of like your second time you get to do this thing. And now you started with your wife traveling. That's what Amy and I did, just the two of us. And then all of a sudden you have kids and they stop traveling. The kids are in school. I see a lot of these Champions Tour guys, but they get this second life. Now the kids are off and in college and they get to go travel with their wife again around the Champions Tour. And let's face it, those guys get it. They understand how to put on a good show. They do the pro-ams right. They give the people what they want, and they have a lot of fun doing it. I'd love to be a part of it here in a few years.
I was out there when they had the Champions Tour event for the senior players this year up at the North Shore, and I'm still so impressed of how well those guys play. Like, I watched Langer up close. There was no one out there, and we had media passes. And watching him from 5 or 6 feet away still, I mean, it's long. It's solid. Like, it looks like he could be playing the PGA Tour, like, to go shoot 20 under par and, you know, three or four rounds on a 7,100-yard golf course. Still, not, you know, they're not playing pitch and putts. And their level of, I was talking to Jerry Kelly about it on the podcast, and he was even surprised still how good those guys in their 50s still really can play. So it's a great tour. It's so much fun to watch those legends still out there doing it.
For sure. There's no just skating around out there, getting out there. Oh, I turned 50. I'm going to make a ton of money. I've heard that from Jerry. I've heard that from Kenny Perry, the show. And I go, these guys are shooting some low scores, and these courses are not that easy to be shooting these mid-60 rounds. So you got to bring your game if you want to compete out there.
Well, let's talk about your background a bit. Growing up in Wisconsin, Menominee Falls, how'd you start playing golf? How'd you fall in love with it? And at what age did you start knowing that the talent was there that you could maybe make a go at it?
Played a lot of different sports growing up. Golf was really golf and basketball were the two that I really loved. And with having parents that are, my dad's 5'4", my mom's 5'1", I kind of figured basketball was going to be a tough thing to do. But I did play 2 years in high school, and that's kind of when I took over with golf. And had some success at the state level and a little bit nationally. Still, colleges were not really interested in me until I had a good run in between my junior and senior year. I lost to Tiger Woods in the U.S. Junior finale and had a couple other top five finishes in tournaments or AJJ events and stuff like that. Won Wisconsin State Junior. That's when all of a sudden they started returning my calls and I got to go on some really neat visits around the country to some great golf universities including places like Houston and Oklahoma State that have just incredible history. And then down there in the Southeast with where I ended up going, University of North Carolina. And so it was kind of really, I would say when I was 17, I thought, you know, let's give this a whirl. I got the scholarship to go to college. And then you just really don't know, though, how good are the professionals versus the players in college. And finally, when I got to play some college events with players who were having success out, say, in U.S. amateurs, so then they qualify for the Masters, and you'd see them make the cut, a guy like a Justin Leonard, I play alongside, and I realized that, yes, they're good golfers. They're not perfect. I could give this a whirl, and that's kind of when I figured once I got done with college, let's at least try it and give it a go and, you know, start on the mini tours. And I guess that's what my TV career feels like right now. I'm starting on the mini tours and hoping to get some opportunities to compete at the highest level.
So there is those stories. You played against Tiger in the amateur days. Did you see his, you know, obviously he had talent, but did you see it at that level? And is there any great stories of playing against Tiger and how great of a competitor he was even then as he is now?
For sure. I mean, I noticed him a few junior events before that, and he was always the story. He was on the front page of the sports section every town he went to, even as young as that I remember when he was 13 years old. And so he had just an incredible pressure put on him and all these expectations. Somehow he seemed to exceed those expectations every time. I mean, winning three straight U.S. juniors and then follow that up with three straight U.S. amateurs. It was incredible. I think mentally is what I was most impressed about. At that U.S. junior, just like many, if you followed golf and you watched those finales in the USGA championships, everybody had him down. For the most part, everyone probably should have, all of his, the guys he was playing against should have beaten him. Somehow he hung in there, was patient, and then had an incredible finish to it. And our match was the same way. I was two up with five to go. And I was enjoying watching him compete and play. And maybe I got distracted by a little bit of that. And knowing his history got in my way. Looking back, though, I felt like I just was doing the best I could. And I do remember one moment. On 17 is a par three. I was, we were all square at that point. And I had maybe an 8-footer for par, and he had like a 6-footer for par. And I rolled mine in. And then I kind of stood up the side of the green and said, well, let's see what this guy's got. You know, he's trying to defend his title, all these expectations. He can't possibly make this. And he rolled it right in. And then we walked to the 18th tee. And it was kind of one of the first times we were by ourselves because we had about 2,000 people following us shot for shot. And there weren't any ropes or anything. People were very close to us. And walking back the 18th tee was only one of those tees where just the players and caddies could go. And so we were alone for the first time. We hadn't chatted a whole lot because it was kind of chaos. And he just said to me, hey, nice putt back there. And that was really cool. That meant a lot to me. It's like, oh, he noticed that. He noticed that those were big putts. And that was really, really kind of him to notice that. And then when I fast forward to playing with him on the PGA Tour, he was very complimentary every time we played together on good shots. And just the confidence you see. I played with him at the BMW Championship. We were tied for the lead going to the third round at Coghill. They just redesigned the golf course and made it a lot more difficult. Deep bunkers, longer, greens were tough. And he goes out and shoots 62, 900 par with a bogey at the first hole. And it was like he was playing a video game. He hit it on the proper side of the hole every hole, and then would roll in a 15 to 20 footer. And then he made it an eagle or two on the par fives. It was something really cool to watch. And he did it so calmly. You could just the confidence that he had in his ability, that was 2009, it was just oozing out of him. And he was like, he knew he was going to win that tournament and many others that year as well. It was really neat to be part of the Tiger Woods era and see him as a teenager start out and then everything he's done in the game and the incredible comeback he's had in the last 2 years. It's been fun to watch.
And then back to your game in, you know, 97, you turn pro and you play all those mini tours. How does that sort of grind you know, shape your competitiveness, your golf game, and then winning on the mini tour. I assume winning breeds winning, so there's some getting off to that start, and I know you won on the Hooters Tour, and kind of getting yourself that you can compete has to be huge to try to get, you know, or on that road to the PGA Tour.
I think it made me definitely more grateful when I got on the PGA Tour. If you jump right on the PGA Tour and you've got your pick of what ball you play on the range, not only if it's a Titleist Pro V1 or a Pro V1X, three different types of Callaway balls, all that stuff, if you get right to the PGA Tour, you're not going to appreciate it as much versus when I started on the mini tours, driving around my Volkswagen with my clothes rod in the back, hanging my golf shirts, going from stop to stop, doing Monday qualifiers, and getting knocked down a lot. And then having a great week, and winning some tournaments, that was very satisfying. And you build on that, there's no doubt. There's a lot of great players out there. Zach Johnson, Jim Furyk, Chad Campbell all played out there. Guys have had incredible careers on the PGA Tour. And so those were the types of players I was competing against. So winning against fields like that, it definitely helped me when I got to the PGA Tour. It was certainly a loftier stage. It's still just golf, though. And if you can just kind of remember the experiences you've had and what worked for you and get to know your body. I mean, it's almost sometimes like an out-of-body experience when you get so nervous that you can't even hold on to the club and your mind's racing and all of a sudden you're just thinking of what not to do. It takes some time to figure out that is not the right approach, that you need to look at these things as opportunities. And when I figured that out through the years, I was able to have some success because I looked at it more as an opportunity. If I put myself in position to win a golf tournament, let's look at it as an opportunity to do something great, not an opportunity to screw up. And that I definitely enjoyed those, all those experiences I had on the Hooters Tour and Teardrop Tour and all those times when you were looking ahead. You weren't playing for the money at that point. You were just trying to pinch pennies and work on your game, and no one's noticing it, right? You're not getting any acclaim for it. You're just trying to improve to get ready for the PGA Tour qualifying tournament in the fall and hoping you can get your card. And it took me a few years to do that. Thankfully, I broke through, and I guess the rest is history.
Yeah, you might have answered my next one I had here, but you know the road's not easy to the PGA Tour, the highest level. You go through Q School, fuel times, back and forth, but then you sort of, and I was looking sort of at your stats and the years out that you get it and you win five times. Was it more mental than physical? Was it just sort of the comfort level of being out there and that you winning breeds winning and you've done this before to maintain that level of play you had for that run? There had to be some self-belief, I'm guessing, or something that kind of let you play at that really high level for that extended period of time.
No doubt. There's a little chip on your shoulder. Like, I want to prove to everybody out here that I can compete. Even though I'm one of the smaller guys, I don't drive it as far as everybody else. And I really thrived on that. I really enjoyed that challenge. And, you know, it was a fun ride. Even starting out on the PGA Tour, you know, I kind of thought of myself as just going to be a journeyman, make some money, and hopefully keep my card. And that's kind of how I played at the beginning of those years. And then I started working with Dr. Bob Rotella at the end of 2006. And he kind of changed my philosophy in a sense. Like, if you keep thinking about yourself as a guy who's, excuse me, as a guy who's a top 125 player, well, that's where you're going to kind of hang out. You're going to finish 124 or 140 or whatever is that. You need to start thinking about yourself as a top 50 player, a top 10 player. And then if you miss that by a little bit, still a great year. And I went in with that, coupled with the fact that he really convinced me that I was physically working at it a little bit too hard. I was putting too many hours in, wearing myself out, and instead of just reacting to trusting in my ability and reacting when I got into tournaments. So those things all together really helped me in 2007 kind of have a new perspective, look at myself as a top player, even though I didn't have anything to back that up with in terms of successes, a few top 10s maybe. And then there were certain moments with my instructor, especially Jim Studdy, was helping me a lot at that point and giving me little tips here or there that then I would go work on. And as Ben Hogan said, dig it out of the dirt. And I'd find something that really felt like I could go with it. And that was kind of in that stretch. I had a few of those epiphany kind of moments. And lately I haven't had any of those. I feel like it's kind of funny. I keep thinking, well, maybe I've tried every swing thought that's known to man. And so I can't. But back in those years, I kept coming up with some new things with the help of Jim Studdy and myself working at it. And sometimes those things really worked and gave me that confidence that I could do it on the golf course and then carry it over to a competition.
You know, winning on the PGA Tour, I have to imagine, special every time you do it, you know, but you've done it 5 times. Of those 5 wins, is there one that stands out in your mind that is the most special out of all of them, or a moment that happened in that tournament that, you know, sort of takes that moment of, this is, it doesn't get any better than this?
You know, they're all so unique in that sense that, you know, winning the first tournament, the Honda that I won in such a weird way where I was hitting it all over the map, but making long par putts and hanging in there. It seemed like I shouldn't be the one winning, but I turned out I was. You know, I think of collectively the 5, the one that stands out to me is the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That's kind of known as more of a bomber's style golf course. It was a week where I'd already won. My wife finally got to watch me win in person at the Sony Open in Hawaii. And then 3 weeks later, we're at Phoenix with my whole family. Our youngest Graham has not been born yet, but here we are. The Green Bay Packers are in the Super Bowl. My caddy's getting cheese heads together so I can wear those on 16, the crazy hole out there. And all of a sudden I start out with 2 really good rounds, and it's like, wow, I'm back in this again. And I win that tournament. And that's the one that when my peers try to come up with the 5 wins, that's the one they struggle with the most. They don't remember that I won that one. I think it's because it's known as more of a bomber's course. So that one kind of stands out as the unique one of the bunch.
Well, I've got a few more here for you, and we'll get you out of here, but they're kind of just quick hitters that ever come to your mind here.
Okay.
I love golf course architecture, and I saw you got to play Pine Valley. So some people consider it the best golf course in the world. Where did you sort of rate that compared to the other, you know, iconic golf courses you've gotten to play, and what was your take of the architecture?
I love the architecture in terms of the variety of holes. There's a lot of pitch and putt holes. The 8th hole comes to mind. The really small, slender, I guess it's almost 3-tiered green. I was going to say 2-tiered green. I guess 2 tiers where you can put the pin. Drive it down there with a 3-wood or something, and you have like a 50-yard little pitch shot. Holes like that, you don't see those that much anymore. Architects are starting to do that again. I mean, we see that, it's no longer on the PGA Tour, but TPC Boston, I remember we had a really goofy 4th hole there that they'd end up changing to a drivable par 4. And we love that. You think of the 10th hole at Riviera, which has gotten a little bit out of hand just because of the green speed. So I love Pine Valley and that the sense of the variety of holes. You know, I grew up on a Don Ross golf course called the Conemaugh Golf Club up in Wisconsin. And so I'm always drawn to Don Ross and his golf courses. I love playing as many as I can. We got Exmoor and Beverly and Oak Park here, to name a few, in the Chicago area. And I love getting a chance to go out there and seeing his expertise back when they don't have the technology that they have now in terms of moving dirt a lot easier and the grasses and all that stuff. So, yeah, I love Pine Valley. It was a great bucket list thing to be able to play.
Is there one golf course on your bucket list you have not played yet that you would just love to have the opportunity to get out there and tee it up and see what that golf course is all about?
Yeah, St. Andrews, no question about it. I've heard from other players that how it's the ultimate in terms of strategy. If you want to take on the tee shot and put it close to the trouble, you got a better angle into the green. Or you can play conservatively off the tee, but then your angle into the green is really difficult. And I just love that. It sounds like a chess game, right? That you're just playing against the course like that. And you have to take on a little bit of risk to make those birdies. And if you don't want to take on the risk, you're not going to shoot a low enough score to compete against the best players in the world. I had the opportunity to play the Open Championship twice in my life, both times in England, which I never got to Scotland. I'm in the process of working on a trip with my father and uncle and cousin to go to Scotland and play all those great courses, and St. Andrews is top of my list.
Wisconsin has certainly turned into a hotbed of great architecture last, say, 5 years. It's amazing how, you could make a iconic trip just from going to Wisconsin anymore. There's such great courses up there and what they've done. So if you're looking at Wisconsin architecture and Illinois architecture from golf courses, what's maybe your two or three favorite from each state? And, why do you love those courses, or maybe one or a couple of each?
Yeah, I think, well, in Wisconsin, if I had one round left to play in my life, it's the Conemaugh Golf Club. And I think I like Donald Ross design. I have just so many memories there of growing up and playing it. I just love the strategy, and most of the greens are front to back, and you just got to be, being over a green is just death. I love playing at Whistling Straits. I've never played a competitive round there, so maybe I'd change my mind because it's so difficult to put the scenery there. And what Herb Kohler has done in Kohler is just so fun, to have all those golf courses right there. And I love the scenery there. So many come to mind, though, in Wisconsin. I really love the tree line thing. Milwaukee Country Club is a blast to play. Those are probably my favorites up in Wisconsin. In terms of Illinois, Butler National is a test unlike any other. So many courses have to trick it up and start shaving around the greens and doing all these things that make it difficult. Butler National does not need to do that. It's just right there in front of you. If you hit a bad shot, it's not going to go much further from where it landed, but you're probably going to be in a situation that's going to be tough to recover from. I remember Beverly Country Club playing the Chicago Open there about 20 so years ago before I got on the PGA Tour. Another tree line course that I love. Those are two that really come to mind in the state of Illinois that are my favorites.
Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
I have to go back to Q School. In 2004, I was at PGA West on the 9th hole, final round, so 108th hole for me. I'd started on the 10th hole that day. There's no leaderboards or scoreboards out there, and at that time there were no smartphones, so no one really knows where you stood. You just kind of have an idea. I really thought I needed to make a birdie to have any chance to get my PGA Tour card back, and I drove it in fairway bunker on the right. And there's no lip to worry about, but it was about 200 yards to the hole, and that's normally a 4-iron for me. I just, for some reason, I just felt like I'm amped up, let's hit 5, and the strike on the ball was almost like I didn't hit it. It felt non-human, especially not what I could do to a golf ball. It came off so solid, so crisp, and right at the flagstick. Went about maybe 18 feet short of the hole. And then I don't really remember the putt. Somehow I rolled that putt in, and it did. I needed that birdie to get my card on the number, which got my card back for the 2005 season. So that bunker shot is always my go-to when I get asked that question.
And my last one here for you, if you could take three other guys on the PGA Tour that you're buddies with, go have dinner, play a fun competitive round of golf, which three guys would you take, and what do you admire most about those people as golfers and as, just the friendships that you have with them?
Yeah, well, we talked about him earlier. Matt Kuchar would be one. I love to laugh, and he is so witty and quick and just a blast to be around. So Matt Kuchar would be one. Jim Furyk is another great guy to play golf with. I mean, it's fitting. He's from like Pittsburgh area. So he just he's got that steel worker mentality of how he goes about playing around the golf. It's just so fun to watch him. Like a tactician going around the golf course. And he gives back so much too. He's helped me out with my charity events, and I've played in his. He's just a fun guy to play golf with and have a beer with. And my last guy is Peter Malnati. He's been a friend now for about 5 years on the PGA Tour. He's what we say, we talk about strokes gained, putting, and off the tee to green, all this kind of stuff on the PGA Tour now. If there was a stat about attitude, he would lead strokes gained attitude every year on the PGA Tour. He has got the most optimistic perspective that I've ever seen. and I admire that. And so it's so fun to be around him. So I think the four of us would have a fantastic time on any golf course you put us on.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've truly enjoyed the conversation. It's fun to talk to a Midwest guy, and I really, really enjoyed it. Thanks for your time, and we'll be watching you on TV and on the golf course commentary, and also hopefully, you know, some good rounds this year on the PGA Tour for the 19 season. So really, really appreciate it, Mark.
Thanks, Jason. All the best to you, and hit it in the fairway and one putt often.
We'll try. Appreciate it. Have a great day.